Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
And I would walk 500 miles.
I would walk 500 more.
Just to be the man who'd walk 1,000 miles to fall down
at your door.
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground. It's the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the United States. We distribute free monthly issues about art, action sports, and subculture. We also have popular recurring columns about cycling, food, and of course, music reviews. Today's episode, we're going to be learning more about the People's Market Seed Swap, Milo Sports and their collaboration with Oakley's Crowbar Goggles, and we'll be speaking with presidential hopeful Rocky Anderson. We are joined today by Tiffin Bruff. She is the president of the board of directors for People's Market, a local collective, and would you say cooperative?
We're actually a nonprofit, and our definite goal is to get neighbors involved and local people involved in their community and in their economy. Sorry. In the summertime, our market sets up at Jordan Park, just outside the Peace Gardens on the river.
And it's been growing every year. People are really excited about the People's Market.
Yep, we've been around 6 years. This will be going into our seventh. We've grown from just a few little vendors meeting on Sundays outside of the community center to moving to the park and growing to be a full market of farmers and artisans in the summertime.
There's a downtown farmers market, and you folks kind of cater to the people on the other side of town, although I'm sure people go to both equally. You're available for that community and are a really vibrant part of that. And you've got an event that's going on soon. It's the Seed Swap.
This will be the sixth year, we've hosted it. Yep. Started out actually just in the front room of a neighbor's house, a few gardeners getting together to trade some of their seeds. It's grown from there. The last couple of years, we've been growing so much that we've outgrown the last couple spaces we've used, which is why we're really happy to have the food co-op give us their warehouse this year so that we have plenty of space to offer room for people to swap and room for people to learn, and it'll be a really, really great space for us this year, I think.
And I'm just going to read a little bit about the description for this event from your website. Gather your leftover vegetables and flower seeds from last year, and then the second step of that. If you have no seeds, you can come anyway, and they'll give you some to start with.
Absolutely.
And of course, bring some friends and get other people excited about that.
Yeah, definitely. A big part of it is just getting involved in that community. If you're interested in gardening or any of that, it's one of the great ways to get your feet wet. We have plenty of experienced gardeners that come as well. The idea really is to seed swap. Swapping has been going on for a long, long time. I mean, since people have started growing their own food, right? So traditionally you would save your seeds as a farmer and plant those again next year. And there are a lot of gardeners that once they get into it, they start doing that and picking their favorite varieties, and they'll keep those seeds from year to year. Those seeds typically do really well. They taste really good. It's a great way to find new varieties that way with other gardeners.
Now, you folks have been around for a while doing different community events. What else do you offer besides the seed swap?
We are also working on some new workshops for people who might be interested in starting a little business or supporting their hobby. If you have an artwork or have a trade, if you can carve wood, something like that, and you're interested in getting into an arts market, we'll be offering some education in that piece as well. We serve the west side of Salt Lake City. That's a big part of what we do, and being there in the neighborhood is important to us, and having a fresh food option and organic food options there is really important.
I have some friends that live on the west side a little bit further than I do. I live on the west side, what people would consider the west side. And our grocery store is
as you say, are, as you may be implying, aren't that great at providing really good local produce.
They have less selection than certainly other parts of the city. Yeah, they don't offer a lot of organic. It's very hard to find. And so if you want fresh and local and you're able to actually ask the grower, how do you grow this? And, you know, did you spray it with pesticides or, you know, do you grow it organically? And you can find really, really also good local produce that might be a little unique.
And you started out at the People's Market by fiddling. Little known fact. Can you recount your history with the organization and how you got involved?
Right. I am an amateur musician as well, and I do like playing with different groups of people. And some friends invited me to come down to the market and join them in playing some fiddle tunes and doing a little hoedown there. So I came down and started doing that, and it was actually a lot of fun. It's a pretty laid-back market. It's not quite so crazy. You definitely get an opportunity to actually talk to people and meet people and talk to the farmers and the artisans as well.
So you worked your way up from fiddling to now being the president of the board of directors.
I was so taken with it. I was like, what else can I do? And I started volunteering and really got my feet wet that way.
That's at the heart of the organization, right? Getting people excited about reinvigorating their community and giving back in the ways that they've been serviced as well. Mm-hmm. How do people get involved?
We've actually had a number of people who've been able to start their idea, People's Market being so accessible, to sort of get their feet wet that way and go on to do bigger and better things with their idea, whether that's a new food product or a new, you know, restaurant business or whatever it might be.
Where can volunteers find out more information? Is the website the best place?
Website would be the best place. There's actually a volunteer application on that. You can also email volunteer@slcpeoplesmarket.org and get you set up that way. And we definitely can use everything from back office stuff that needs to go on to setting up and running the market. So
that's great. And what's some more information about this seed swap? I'm sure it's a little bit more involved than just the basics that we discussed earlier.
I mean, you can come and bring your seeds to trade, but there's also local seed providers who will be there with their varieties of seeds for sale. And there are some local companies that also donate seeds. And so if you're a brand new gardener and just need something to start out with, we'll have a little bit of that for people kind of on a first come, first serve basis. We've also got some other local groups bringing things to educate people about the variety of food and how to grow it. So Slow Food and their Arc of Taste project, they bring seeds. This will be another year that they will have some great heirloom varieties. And Arc of Taste is a project to preserve unique varieties of food that are sort of in danger of disappearing because they're not grown by big agricultural productions. And
like an heirloom variety of corn, for instance, something like
right,
that.
Right, corn or peppers or, you know, whatever it is. And these all are really wonderful flavors and wonderful things to cook with that need to be preserved. Wasatch Community Gardens will also be there doing some workshops on seed starting, and they'll do a couple of those workshops throughout the evening, and people who attend one of those as a new gardener will also be able to walk away with a new set of seeds to take and start at their home.
I was watching a documentary recently, and it talked about the fact that sometimes people aren't even allowed to keep their seeds anymore. I know that is more pertinent to Monsanto and their patented seeds, but what is the future of the seed in American farming and local agriculture, would you say?
Right, that's really been pared down to a limited number of seeds. When you have large agricultural productions that are doing it in monoculture, they pick one variety of seed and only grow that out. And so a lot of the genetic diversity is being lost in the bigger productions and being preserved more by small-scale growers and people who are interested in preserving some of those heritage varieties.
Which are the people that are involved in the seed swap?
Yeah, Slow Food That's every great. Year brings some of that.
Is there anything else you'd like to let us know about the People's Market or the Seed Swap?
This year, the Seed Swap is with the Community Food Co-op, and that is located at 1726 South and 700 West in Salt Lake City. So it's just south of 17th South as you go under the freeway, and there will be plenty of parking and plenty of room inside the warehouse.
That takes place from 5 to 7 p.m. on January 21st. I'm going to be there. It sounds really exciting. I just got into gardening locally this year, so I'm quite excited.
We'll be totally excited to have you.
Thanks, Tiffin.
Thanks for having me.
The Weekenders is a rock group from Salt Lake City, founded by frontman Rob Reinfert, who after building a studio in his bedroom, recorded dozens of tracks by himself. In the spring of 2010, Reinfert decided to take the songs public, recruiting Nick Stevens, John Murphy, and James Cherry to form the band The Weekenders. The band is currently working on their debut release, and from that release, we actually have a sneak peek. Here's 20 Armed Men. That was a sneak peek from The Weekender's upcoming album. That song was called 20 Armed Men. The band is going to be playing the Sand Trap at 2851 Washington Boulevard in Ogden on Friday, January 27th. And for more information on the band and their upcoming album, visit them at reverbnation.com/theweekenders. In December 2011, Oakley released their Crowbar Goggle, a specially designed pair of goggles inspired by Utah's Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons. Oakley teamed with Milo Sport to sell the goggles as an exclusive product for the season. Here's Orem Milo Sport shop manager Benny Pellegrino speaking with Slug writer and photographer Katie Panzer.
So how did this collaboration come about? Did Oakley approach you guys, or did you approach them?
They came to us. They mentioned a program at the trade show, but 5 years ago, I believe that they were starting this program where they wanted to do with select shops around the country, you know, collabs. So the first one we did was an A-frame. We didn't have as much creative control as we have now. We were basically able to pick an existing color that was already in the line, and we got to add just a little Milo patch to it. It went over really well. The A-frame is kind of a smaller goggle. When we got back from the trade show, we kicked it around. We have three stores, one in Northern California, one in Salt Lake, and one here. So we all made sure that all the owners of all three stores are all in separately financially, but we worked together, of course, on team, collab, purchasing, product, marketing, everything. So everyone was super into it. So we went for it. The minimums were a little high. And like I said, the A-frame's a smaller fitting goggle. So a lot of guys weren't into it. You know, some didn't mind, but with the advent of bigger goggle frames now, it was probably something that we're like, okay, if we ever do it again, let's pick a different goggle. And we kind of didn't hear about the collab thing with them for a while. And come last trade show, they mentioned it to us like right at the beginning of our discussions with them, you know, for looking at new products. They said, you know, we really want to do another goggle with you, but this time you will have full creative control. You can do anything you want. Pick your own colors, design your own anything. You know, design the strap, design the goggle bag. Next time they said we'll even be able to get our own box, which will be cool. So it'll be a complete separate box with our design all over it.
Cool. That was actually my next question is, what was Milo's involvement in the design process?
I was kind of in charge of hiring designers and photographers. That was our idea. Jared Strain, who owns an advertising agency called Super Top Secret up in Salt Lake, works with everyone from Ford to DC to K2 to Powder Mountain. You know, huge accounts and small accounts. They just want to go with ones that they're important projects. Super talented individuals. There's a group of like 8 of them, I believe, from computer programmers, web designers, to artists, everything. Pretty cool spot. I don't know if you've ever been there. They got a ramp inside. It's right by the Broadway Theater on that little alleyway. It's old Chinatown. Salt Lake had a Chinatown at one point. Yeah, and it was in that alley.
I had no idea.
Jared Strain, who is one of the founders of that company, co-owner as well, we approached him about designing it. And I said, you know, here's full creative control of what, you know, you come up with. I asked him for 6 designs, and he came up with 6 totally different endemic designs. And then we went to everyone involved, all managers, longtime employees, and owners of all 3 stores voted, and that was the one that came up. I tweaked a few things at the end, added the red to make it pop. They were gonna do these white and whatnot, but we just needed to make something pop. And then Andrew Miller is a local photographer in Salt Lake, young and up-and-coming photographer, has done a lot of work for all the magazines. And I knew he had a lot of images, and I always wanna help promote new photographers, writers, anything. I mean, we have relationships with Rob Mathis, Andy Wright, all these different people. But, you know, Ethan Fortier. And so I was like, let's try Andrew. You know, he's enthusiastic and he's into it. So Andrew provided all the photography, and it is an inspiration from Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon, because that's kind of like where Milo's heart is. And so one side is from the top of Wolverine Cirque, looking across Brighton, which is Twin Lakes Pass behind Brighton, into Superior, which is in Little Cottonwood. Kind of a cool view that not a lot of people get to see unless they've been up there. And then that's just the extended part of it right there. And we only had 100 made between all 3 stores.
So they're super limited edition.
So we got to pick, yeah. So we've had people buying them from Japan, Europe, you know, all over the place.
Really?
It's pretty cool, yeah. People that are like Oakley collectors, you know. There's a lot of people that are into different frog skins, all the different gas cans, mm-hmm. Holbrooks that they make. There's goggle collectors out there too. You know, people that live in the snow world, live, breathe, and eat the snow world, that travel and cruise around, they're into it.
Oakley chose to feature Milo and the Cottonwood Canyons over any other shop or...
We've had a really good relationship with them as far as like bringing up riders. So a lot of riders have come through our stores that have come along, you know, come on to be some of their, you know, top paid pro athletes, most marketed athletes. And we have a really good relationship within the company, from the head of marketing, the entire head of snow actually now, Maddie Swanson, to Josh Hoyer, who is a regional sales director, to our reps, Kim Ginsler and Summer Clark. And I think they know that we live, breathe, and eat snowboarding. So I think they wanted to have, you know, a collaboration with a shop like that. I mean, there's other great shops in the Valley that they could have chosen, and we're pretty honored that they picked us.
So is this going to be a yearly collaboration, or is it kind of a one-time?
I don't think we'll do it yearly. I think it'll be the next time we do it. It'll probably be in a couple years again. They said they would rather do it, you know, they don't want to wait 5 years, but they want to do it a little bit more frequently. And they're talking about every time doing it with a different goggle, just to highlight different goggles.
Cool.
So I don't think it'll be the last collaboration we do with Oakley, no. Hopefully many more for the next forever, yeah. You know? It's a great company. We like to be aligned with them.
Is Milo the only place you can buy the goggles?
Yes.
And
online and in all the stores.
How have they been selling?
They've been doing good. Like I said, they're a little bit more expensive because of collaboration. I mean, it's a special makeup, so they got to halt production of goggles they're making tens of thousands of to make a limited run of 100. So they're a little bit more expensive, so they're not the fastest. But I don't think that that's another reason we don't want to ever have to put them on sale. So we probably won't have them for, you know, every single year, a new collab. We want to be able to sell out at full price and make it something special.
So what other features do they have besides the awesome design?
They have the Fire Iridium lens, which is probably the most quintessential piece of Oakley that everyone knows. They were the first ones to do iridium. It's just basically a coating that provides not only 100% UVA and UVB protection, but it's the most reflection of light as well. So your eyes are at their most relaxed state when it's super bright out. Being able to use the Fire Iridium lens, you get the highest quality lens they make. There is actually now a Fire Iridium polarized, which would push the goggle up to probably $250, because the lens alone, I believe, is $150, like if we want to sell it, just the lens. So then now they have Fire Iridium polarized. That's probably just a little bit out of our league and price range, but it's just the best possible lens you can get. Another couple cool things that they've added on crowbars now for people with helmets and or beanies, they added this little silicone bead all the way around the strap, so it holds onto your helmet for one, so it doesn't slip around all over the place, as well as onto your beanie. Besides that, the crowbar has been their number one goggle for probably the last 5 years. I think in the future, you'll see some of their other goggles featured with collabs, if not from us, from some of the other, you know, good shops around the country.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I want to thank those guys. Like I said, the people I mentioned earlier at Oakley, you know, Josh Hoyer, Maddie Swanson, Kim Ginsler, and Summer Clark for giving us this opportunity, and Andrew Miller for photography, and Jared Strain for the design. He's done a lot of stuff work for us. He did a collaboration with Celtec on our own specific pair of gloves.
I saw those are really cool.
Yeah, we have a bunch of different collaborations, and I always choose to pick Jared because he's got tons of different styles. If you give him a minor direction, he takes it into something that probably wouldn't have seen. He's just so creative that it's pretty cool that he works for us, and he charges a lot of other people a lot of money. All he asks from us is, let me get a pair. So it's pretty cool.
It's a good deal.
Yeah, for sure.
For more information on the goggles and Milo Sport in general, go to their website at milosport.com.
Every week, I get to sit down with Esther Moronio and do the daily calendar. And here she's joining us once more. Thank you, Esther.
You're so welcome.
We get to talk about local events that you can find in our magazine and the last few pages. Our calendar is there as well as the website on slugmag.com on the front page.
It is.
It's everything you need to know in town. Somebody asked me at a bar once, what can you do in this town for fun? And I said, well, is there a slug nearby? Let's look at it.
So smart.
I just went right to it because it's a resource.
Did you get the phone number afterwards?
It was a guy and his girlfriend, and I felt, though, that although I could have swung with them.
Is yeah.
That past tense of swing? I felt it was not the time. They're mainly interested in drinking at a bar and no hanky-panky.
Missed opportunity.
In the future, though, I'm just going to go straight for that. Thank you, Esther, for encouraging me.
You're welcome.
That has nothing to do with events, though.
Well, some events, not our events, though.
Thankfully. We've got a pretty exciting end of the January month for you, starting with Tuesday, January 24th at the Complex. Royal Bliss is going to be performing.
Yep, they're local. Well, I guess they started out local, and then they signed to Capitol Records, and they're an American rock band. Pretty popular.
They're still kicking around Utah, though. But that's a pretty big venue for a local group to play, so go out and support Royal Bliss if you're a fan. And we've got a few birthdays coming up this week as well. January 26th, a happy birthday to Espo.
Yay, happy birthday, Espo. He's on our marketing staff.
And Friday, January 27th, happy birthday to Jason Gianchietta.
Gianchietta.
I pronounce that
AKA
way.
AKA cheese.
Can we just say cheese then? Why did I have to, you know, stumble over that shit? What kind of name is that? I'm sorry.
Looks like it's Italian.
This man must answer for his incredibly complex names. We're American, goddammit. We like names like Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And Moronio. Also on Friday, the ABK CD release party at Burt's is taking place. Burt's is a great local punk rock venue.
It is, and ABK actually played our Localized just about a week ago, so.
What a great job that Localized
was. It was the best Localized show ever.
And Saturday, January 28th, why don't you tell people what's going on at the Complex, because I know you're way into metal.
You know me so well, JP. Ghost, Blood Ceremony, and Ancient Wisdom. It's two V's, but I think it's wisdom. And there's actually a feature in our January issue about Ghost, and they're a pretty crazy metal band, very much into the whole theme dress-up thing. I'm not sure that's not how they like to have it described.
And if you're not into metal, fortunately, there is an alternative event at Urban Lounge. It's not alternative rock. It is indie folk rock from Portland.
Yep, it's Blind Pilot. And it should be a pretty big show.
And we have another event on Monday, January 30th to talk about. It's actually a part of a series that you participated in once, Esther, if I'm not mistaken. Put Your Mouth Where the Word Is. It's a poetry slam at Moe's Neighborhood Grill. What did you do with those guys?
Well, I joined in on their haiku slam. And I wrote like 20 haikus. And I only got to recite two of them because then I got booed off the stage. Not really, but yeah, I failed. Even though I thought my haiku was way better than the other guys, but whatever.
Do you have a haiku you can share right now?
I have a bunch of them, but I'm not going to. Actually, I will share one of them. When I was little, I had a bag of magic. Where did I put it?
That was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And it made me think about when I was a kid. You related to your audience. Good job, Esther.
Yeah, thanks. And actually, we did an interview with the two guys who put this slam series together in our episode number 15.
That's not just haiku, though, to clarify. It's all sorts of poetry.
Yep, they just had one that was themed haiku.
Esther, I like reading the hardcover issue of Slug Magazine, but we're also online, of course, and now we have an app on the iTunes market. Did you know that?
I did. But only for iPhone users.
That makes
unfortunately.
Sense.
One day we will broaden our grasp.
But what's available on the iPhone? This is probably a reason to get an iPhone anyways, because the app is really cool now. We've updated it a little bit. You can get the podcast on there. You can even call us directly, our voicemail, from our app, and you can download episodes straight to your phone. In addition, of course, to finding the daily calendar. Thanks. It's on there as well. Thanks, Esther.
You're welcome. Feel your warmth and the sun on my face.
The Mooks are a three-piece punk band from Salt Lake City who burst onto the scene in 2009 with their debut album, The Snuggle Sessions. The group has played off and on over the past 3 years, releasing one other EP, Like You Like You, in 2010. And in late December 2011, the band released a cassette single with three tracks. From that cassette, here's Two Become One. That was the title track off of the Mooks To Become One cassette single. For more information on the group, look up the Mooks on Facebook. That's M-O-O-K-S. And to download the full cassette as well as the band's other albums, visit them at mooksuck.bandcamp.com. We're sitting here with former Salt Lake City mayor and current presidential candidate of the Justice Party, Rocky Anderson. How are you doing, Rocky?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thanks for coming by today.
Good to be here. I love your offices.
Oh, thanks.
And actually, our headquarters is just right through the block, right above Caputo's,
I'm going to start off by reading something that you said. We the people are powerful enough to end the perverse government to the highest bidder system sustained by the two dominant parties. We are here today for the sake of justice, social justice, environmental justice, and economic justice. You said that on the launch date of the Justice Party in a speech. And how's the campaign been unfolding since that initial public announcement?
It's been amazing. Even before that announcement, I was on Rachel Maddow. And then right after the launch, we got calls from MSNBC, CNN, a lot of radio stations, both national and local stations. We've reached millions and millions of people since this started just a few weeks ago. And at the same time, we're building our headquarters staff, the volunteer base. I just wish there were more hours in the day, but I think that the fact that so many people are responding shows that the people of this country really want a different way, that they've had it with the system that has been sustained by and that sustains the Democratic and Republican parties, that they want something other than simply replacing those who play their roles according to the rules. They want to change the rules, and that's what this is all about, getting the corrupting influence of money out of government and overthrowing the dictatorship of corrupt money, this plutocracy that we have.
And I see that they use the word justice a lot in that speech, and also it's the name of the party. What does that mean to the campaign? Can you name some specific types of justice that you're looking for?
Well, I think really it means everything in this country, and so much of what I grew up thinking of in terms of justice and what our Constitution provides and what our nation really stands for has been in very large part decimated during the last 10 years. I really think a lot about young people who have come of age in the last 10 years and the nation, their view of this nation, what it must be, a country that engages in aggressive war with impunity, that engages in some of the most heinous human rights violations with impunity, that engages in civil rights violations, warrantless wiretapping, for instance, with impunity, meaning no accountability. It doesn't matter who's in power, whether it was President Bush or President Obama. They all cover for each other. Very sad thing to me to see that our justice system, something I firmly believe in, that's why I went to law school, it's why I practiced law for 21 years, that all of a sudden the scales that Lady Justice is holding are completely out of balance. That we have this aristocracy, we have this privileged class that is no longer held accountable under the law.
And that's a good point that you bring up, that there's little accountability for these sort of things that they're doing, and even in new acts are being passed, or new parts rather, of things like the NDAA, which involve the detainment without rights of a trial, suspension of habeas corpus. How would you attack these sort of things that have already been enacted as president?
It's not just habeas corpus, it's due process. Our Constitution says the government cannot take anyone's life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And now it's up to one person to point at the finger and say, he's a troublemaker, he's a belligerent. That's one of the words that's used in the NDAA, belligerents. He's a belligerent. I'm a belligerent. I'll admit to it. I concede. Does that mean they can come and pick me up, kidnap me, put me away? No legal representation, no charges, no trial. It is absolutely un-American. It's as subversive a piece of legislation as has ever been passed in this country.
And how would you combat something like that?
Well, as President of the United States, first thing I would do is declare first day on the job that I will never exercise the powers that Congress purported to pass on to the president, an imperial presidency, a dictator, a tyrant, if anyone ever exercised those powers. And then I would do everything I could to get public support for the immediate repeal of that legislation. And if that weren't good enough, I would challenge constitutionality of it. I would take it on in the courts because it's blatantly unconstitutional.
That's interesting. That's a good point you bring up. All these things that are going on seem to be against the Constitution. And some people might say, people in my generation, that what is the Constitution for if it can't protect us like this?
Well, that's right. It's just a piece of paper. That's why when I practiced law, it was such an inspiring thing for me to go into the courthouse. And, you know, you'd have people on the other side who on the outside had a lot of power. They could abuse that power. And I represent a lot of people who were victims of that abuse. But you walk into the courtroom, all of a sudden everything's evened out. Now they have to answer to the law for their abuses of power, for their constitutional violations.
I know you folks are loosely associated with the Occupy movement. How does that factor into what you're trying to
do? Well, the Occupy movement is the healthiest thing I've seen in over a decade in this country. I was asking, you may have heard me when I was mayor, saying, where is everybody? Why are we allowing this to go on? In real time, our president is engaged in a war of aggression, the kind of war of aggression that we were prosecuting people for at Nuremberg, that was in blatant violation of our treaty obligations, blatant violation of the United Nations Charter. Two secretaries general of the United Nations said it was absolutely illegal under international law. Why weren't we standing up against that? Especially when we found out that it was all based on a pack of lies. And then the human rights violations, the civil rights violations in connection with it. So the exploitation of the fear that came about from the events on 9/11 was so destructive to our nation, everything that we stand for, and certainly destructive to our international relations. You know, the people of Tehran, hundreds of thousands of them came out for a candlelight vigil right after 9/11 to show their solidarity and sympathy for the American people after 9/11. And now, after George Bush says that Iran is part of the axis of evil, and we're saber rattling, and we're sending out ships off the border of Iran, off the coast, doing the worst kind of saber rattling, because of the speculation that they might be building up a nuclear weapons capability without any real proof of it. they've said all along, this is for their energy uses. Well, you don't have to just believe them, but you send in the weapons inspectors, like we did in Iraq. And what did the weapons inspectors say then? He's not building up a nuclear capability. He doesn't have any weapons of mass destruction. And by the way, Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice both said just before 9/11 that Saddam Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction, that he didn't even pose a threat to his neighbors. And then that administration carried on this campaign of misinformation to lie us into that war. We've got to be so vigilant about this. We're very careless when it comes to making war. We're very arrogant about it. And it's going to have dire, dire ramifications for our country and for our future.
So what would your, in this particular case, you're bringing up with Iran, what would your policy be, your international policy dealing
with those
kinds of states?
Well, not to make war against the people of Iran. Yeah, they've got some bad leaders. We've had bad leaders. That didn't mean other countries should have come and attacked us. What do we do with North Korea? They have nuclear weapons. What do we do with Pakistan? Pakistan was hiding away Osama bin Laden. They've been aiding al-Qaeda. They have nuclear weapons. Are we going to make war? Are we just going to go around and make war against everybody? It's really good for the military-industrial complex, but it's not very good for the rest of us. We put so many resources into destructiveness, into killing people, into taking things in a direction that's going to make more enemies. What we did after 9/11, it was the greatest recruiting tool al-Qaeda ever could have had. And so we just need a different approach, and we need leaders that'll tell the American people the truth.
Sounds like you're the guy.
I'm pretty truth-telling.
Yeah, at the point of maybe bringing down the ire of certain people and political parties here in Salt Lake, you are a controversial mayor. I'm putting quotes around that. But it seems like you're more interested, not that you weren't then, but you were perceived as trying to burn some bridges, but you're all about building them now, it seems like.
I've always been about building bridges, but I think you have to tell the truth in the process. People respect it in the long run. I mean, really, how many people have a deep respect for Mitt Romney now? I had tremendous respect for him. I worked with him a lot through the Olympics. We were good friends. I endorsed him, did a commercial for him when he ran for governor. Then he did a commercial for me when I ran for re-election. But a man who would change his views, sometimes only days apart, because that's what the polls show, because that's what he thinks he needs to do to get the nomination. That's what leaves us so cynical in this country about politics. I'd rather have somebody look me straight in the eye and tell me exactly the opposite of what I share in terms of values than have them flip-flop and tell me what they think that I want to hear and then never be able to trust who they're going to be the next day or what they're actually going to do once they're in office.
It seems like the American populace has been trained to accept that as an inevitability of politics, but you're saying no.
That may be why so few people vote anymore. In Utah, we have, I think, the lowest percentage of voting age people registered to vote. And in the last three presidential elections, we were either dead last in the country or next to dead last. People stay home. And a lot of it is, I know, because of the Electoral College and because people feel that their vote isn't going to matter. Imagine if everybody else is staying home, but a huge group of people who really believe in changing the system get out and fight and they organize and they overthrow this dictatorship of corruption in our government. And the inspiration ought to be what happened around the Arab world. Why is it that in Egypt, Tunisia, these people were putting it all on the line. They put their lives on the line in Libya. They organized in large part through democratized communication sources like social media. But then they came out and they wouldn't let down and they overthrew these dictatorships. Dictatorships that'll kill you if you stand up against them. They hung in there and did it. We can do the same thing in this country if we'll avoid the fear that the lesser of two evils might be defeated by the greater of two evils, and instead affirmatively embrace the possibility of real change.
It's interesting that you bring up that topic of fear. I have another quote from you. Because some of your supporters might be afraid to vote for you because they think that it could steal a vote, quote-unquote steal a vote, from somebody else. You've said regarding that, if that fear essentially trumps the possibility of the creation of a new party that could bring about a real change in the system, then things will continue to get worse.
It's absolutely true. You're voting for the status quo if you vote for either the Republican or the Democrat in this race. They're all playing by the same rules. They reinforce the game. They thrive on the corrupt system that we have right now. President Obama, the largest recipient of Wall Street money when he ran, surrounds himself, once he's president, with Goldman Sachs folks and others of their ilk from Wall Street. Not one person has been prosecuted by the Obama administration for the massive financial fraud that brought our economy to its knees and brought much of the rest of the world's economy to its knees. And we know the fraud was rampant. We saw Goldman Sachs touting to their clients these products, these derivative products. So their clients were buying them up, and then Goldman Sachs bet billions of dollars against them without disclosing that to their clients. That's not fraud. Of course it is. It
sounds like you have some real tangible solutions to these problems that the country is facing. How do people find out more information, and how can they get involved with your campaign?
Go to our website, voterocky.org. That's a good beginning. We don't have a lot of position papers up yet. We're trying to do that, but on a lot of these issues, you'll see from the media and the other materials we have there. But, you know, I say it all the time. I've said it since way before I got involved in electoral politics. What we ought to look at is who the person is and what they've done with their lives before they start running for office. Because anybody can say what they think are the right things when they're running. Look at Obama. He was a master at it, but he'd never done any of it. I was on a radio interview the other day, and I was talking about something that I did as mayor, and they asked me the question. I think it was about restorative justice. And I was talking about, well, when I was mayor, we put in the system. The guy stopped me and said, "That's right, I never thought of that." He said, "You've actually been out there doing this on all these issues. You stood up against the war, you stood up against his violations of human rights, you built a restorative justice program, you've dealt with poverty issues, homelessness issues, mass transit issues, pollution, climate change. I did all of those things. And it was a huge interest of mine before I ran for mayor." So I think the best thing people can do if they want to get a real idea of what somebody's going to do when they're in office, what their passions are, whether they have integrity, take a look at what they've done with their lives up to that point. That's a lot better than looking at somebody's position paper. But having said that, we are preparing position papers, but it's a long process. We didn't have a lot of lead time. I decided to do this just shortly before I got into the race. It's taken off like a rocket. And we're just trying to keep with it all the time. We're working night and day, 7 days a week right now.
And I'm sure that that people can help by donating to the campaign. I saw somewhere that there's a cap at $100 per person, though.
Well, we put in place that cap. And right. It's so everybody can be an equal partner. You know, people that say, "Hey, that's really great, we need to take the money out of politics," and then who don't step up, really are sort of betraying that whole idea. If people really believe that all of us working together, building a grassroots network, making this a people's movement for a change in our system, then I ask, please do your part. Contribute, go to the website, become involved as a volunteer. We need all sorts of help in this campaign, not just here locally. This is a national campaign. Come be part of this. It's very, very exciting. And it is a perfect storm. The polls show that the vast majority of Americans want to see a major alternative party. And a large number of people have said they're almost certain, well, that they're either certain or very likely to vote for a candidate from an alternative party rather than for the Democrat or Republican.
I have a statistic here from the Reason Foundation that states 80% of voters would consider an alternative presidential ticket in the upcoming election. It doesn't sound like that's too high of a number. I think everyone's frustrated. According to Congress's approval ratings right now, that's pretty evident.
Well, people are fed up with Congress. But what's really interesting is that Republicans are fed up with members of their own party in Congress, and Democrats are fed up with members of their own party in Congress. It's across the board. And then President Obama's ratings are, what, in the low 40s? For good reason. I'm surprised they're that high, frankly. He has completely betrayed his base. He's shown that he has no principle when it comes to the rule of law, to our constitutional values. And by the way, we're talking earlier about the indefinite detention provision in the Military Authorization Act. That wasn't just foisted upon him by a bizarre Congress. He asked for those powers. In 2009, he gave a speech. Rachel Maddow raked him over the coals for it, and it's still on YouTube. I recommend to anybody, go to Rachel Maddow, Indefinite Detention, and you'll see the piece that she did on this and parts of his speech. He asked for the legal power to whisk people away, in other words, for it is kidnapping them, detaining them without legal representation, without any right of habeas corpus, without charges, and without a trial.
I did not even know about that. And he's signed the NDAA with a heavy heart, you might want to be led to believe by his policymakers.
It wasn't a heavy heart. He could have vetoed it.
He could have,
and right. He said, well, I did it because we need the money that's authorized for the military. No. When somebody's saying they're giving you the purported power to go around and do what was characteristic of China under Mao or the Stalags in Russia, in the Soviet Union, or the military dictatorship in Argentina during the Dirty War, is that really what we've become as a nation? Is that what we the people are going to tolerate? This president has absolutely betrayed the highest values that this nation stands for, in disregard of the War Powers Clause, in disregard of the Due Process Clause, in disregard of the whole underlying premise under the rule of law, by saying that there's certain classes of people who are not going to be held to account for their egregious violations of the law.
Well, I'm glad you're stepping into the fray and adding a voice. I think any alternative at this point is good, but you offer a really good one. So for more information, visit voterocky.org. Thank you once more, Mr. Anderson, for coming in. And also feel free to follow him at his Twitter feed, at President Rocky.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things related to Slug Magazine, please visit us at slugmag.com. If you have any comments or feedback about Sundance, Slam Dance, X Dance, or any of the other festivals happening this week, send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call us on our voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our associate producers are Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Make sure you listen next week when we'll be doing a panel recap of the Sundance Film Festival.